Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 10, Prahlad, the best among exalted devotees. Text 6. Aham,
aham
to akamas twad bhaktas twam cha swami anapashraya nanyate havayo
nanyate
Arto Raja Sevakayo Eva Aham Twakamas Twad Bhaktas Twam Chaswam Yana Pashraya
Twam Chaswam Yana Pashraya
Nanyate Havayor Arto
Nanyate Havayor Arto
Rajaseva Kayor Iva
Rajaseva Kayor Iva
Aham Twakamas Twad Bhaktas
Aham Twakamas Twad Bhaktas
Twam cha swam yana pashraya
Twam cha swam yana pashraya
Nanyate havayo arto
Nanyate havayo arto
Rajaseva kayor iva
Rajaseva kayor iva
Aham twakamas twad bhaktas
Aham twakamas twad bhaktas
Twam cha swam yana pashraya
Twam cha swam yana pashraya
Nanyate havayor arto
Nanyate havayor arto
Rajaseva kayor iva
Rajaseva kayor iva
Aham
Aham
As far as I am concerned
Indeed.
Akama. Without material desire.
Twat
bhakta.
Fully attached to you without motivation.
Twam cha. Your lordship also. Swami, the real master, Anapashraya,
without motivation.
You do not become the master with motivation. Na,
not.
Anyata, without being in such relationship. As master and servant. Iha.
Here.
Avayo.
Our.
Arta.
Any motivation.
The Lord is the pure master. And Prahlad Maharaj is the pure devotee. With no materialistic motivation. Raja of a king. Sevakayo.
And the servitor.
Eva.
Like.
Just as a king exacts taxes. For the benefit of the servant, or the citizens pay taxes,
justice.
For the benefit of the king.
For the benefit of the king.
Okay. Translation. Oh my Lord, I am your unmotivated servant, and you are my eternal master. There is no need of our being anything other than master and servant. You are naturally my master, and I am naturally your servant. We have no other relationship. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Jivera Swarupaya Krishnera Nitya Das. Every living being is eternally a servant of the Supreme Lord Krishna. Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 5:29, Bhoktaram Yagyatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. I am the proprietor of all planets, and I am the supreme enjoyer. This is the natural position of the Lord. And the natural position of the living being is to surrender unto him. Sarva dharman parityaja, mam ekam sharanam raja. If this relationship continues, then real happiness exists eternally between the master and servant. Unfortunately, when this eternal relationship is disturbed, the living entity wants to become separately happy and thinks that the master is his order supplier. In this way, there cannot be happiness. Nor should the master cater to the desires of the servant. If he does, he is not the real master. The real master commands, "You must do this." And the real servant immediately obeys the order. And this, unless this relationship between the Supreme Lord and the subordinate living entity is established, there can be no real happiness. The living entity is Ashraya, always subordinate, and the Supreme Lord is Vishaya, the supreme objective, the goal of life. Unfortunate persons trapped in this material world do not know this. Natevru svarta gatim hivishnum. Illusioned by the material energy, everyone in this material world is unaware that the only aim of life is to approach Lord Vishnu. Aradhananam sarvesham. Vishnor aradhanam param tasmat parataram devi tadiyanam samarchanam. In the Padma Purana, Lord Shiva explains to his wife Parvati, the goddess Durga, that the highest goal of life is to satisfy Lord Vishnu, who can be satisfied only when his servant is satisfied. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore teaches, Gopi Bhartu Padakamalayo Dasa Das Amudas. One must become a servant of the servant. Prahlad Maharaj also prayed to Lord Nrisimhadev that he might be engaged as a servant of the Lord's servant. This is the prescribed method of devotional service. As soon as the devotee wants the Supreme Personality of Godhead to be his order supplier, the Lord immediately refuses to become the master of such a motivated devotee. In Bhagavad Gita 4:11, the Lord says, Ye yata mantravadyante tamstataiva bhajamyaham. As one surrenders unto me, I reward him accordingly. Materialistic persons are generally inclined to material profits. As long as one continues in such an adulterated position, he does not receive the benefit of returning home back to Godhead. Aham tvakamas tvadbhaktas, tvam chaswam yanapashraya,
Nanyate habayor arto rajaseva kayor iba. O my Lord, I am your unmotivated servant, and you are my eternal master. There is no need of our being anything other than master and servant. You are naturally my master, and I am naturally your servant. We have no other relationship. Nama Om Vishnu Padme Krishna Prasthaya Bhutanesh Mani Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tinami Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Prachayani Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Prasthachyani Ajitanya Shri Krishna Jaitanya Brahma Nityananda Shri Advaiti Gadadha Shri Vasati Gauravakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, continuing so much in the theme of what we were reading yesterday, what is master, what is servant? What does a person have to do to be a real master? And what does a person have to do to be a real servant? It is actually, these positions are very high. It's not a cheap thing to be a real master. And it is not at all a cheap thing to be a real servant. Actually, these are very glorious positions. So a person who's a real master, in and of himself, without any force, without bribery, without trickery, he can evoke within the heart of the real servant that desire that I want to serve. I want to serve and I only want to serve. And that's the right thing to do. It is the correct thing to do. And it is the nicest thing to do. And I will be happiest if I am simply serving the real master. Not some cheap master who has no qualification and is abusing the servant in various ways and taking advantage of his so-called position as master, and just to accumulate sense gratification for himself. Not that sort of master. How can that sort of master inspire someone to become a real servant? That's not possible. So in Vedic times, we were reading in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, and it's mentioned here, what was it? A king exacts taxes for the benefit of the servant. He exacts taxes for the benefit of the taxed person. To help the taxed person in ways that the taxed person could not help himself or herself if they retained the money and didn't give it in tax. The real master can take some tax and use it better for the benefit of the taxed person than the taxed person, and therefore the taxed person in that situation, the taxed person feels, I'm glad I paid taxes. Do you want more? So we all know, or at least those of us who ever paid taxes, I don't know how many of you paid taxes or have, but everybody knows that when it comes to paying taxes, nobody wants to pay taxes. And where they have to pay taxes, they pay as little as possible, And there are people. There are lawyers and accountants, people like that, who make big livings just by telling people how you can avoid paying taxes. Yes. It's like that. And when people go in to pay taxes, and they pay the taxes, they're not happy. And the people accepting the taxes, they have also some perverted type of consciousness. And there's no question of the taxed person being happy. Here I am, please take my taxes. Have I paid enough? There's no question of it. But rather, if they could somehow escape paying taxes completely, they wouldn't. Yes, for various reasons. On one hand, they know that we're just being, in various ways, we are being cheated. Because so many of these taxing people, they are just stealing our money for their sense gratification. With all due respect, I remember when Mr. Mandela became the president. Of course, he's highly respected in materialistic circles. But Mr. Mandela, he immediately gave himself a pay increase up to the level of the President of the United States. And he said, well, I read it in the Star, so it must be right. Anyway, that's another subject. But he said, well, I'm doing the same job. So the pay should be commensurate. Well, you rascal, why don't you arrange that all the people in South Africa get paid the same as all the people in America? Ha ha! People in South Africa are being paid a fraction. A fraction. In fact, in many, many cases, you can just take the rand amount that people are being paid in South Africa, and just take out the R for rand, and put in the dollars sign, and that's the difference. Yeah. So, and living in, as they would say in Chatsworth, big lani house somewhere. So people know about these things. At least they know about some of these things. The king of Swaziland was, I don't know if he did actually, but he was going to go to this big wedding of Prince William and Kate. And he has how many? 17 wives? I think it's either 15 or 17. He's beat Zuma hands down. And he was going to take a whole aeroplane for him and his wives and his entourage. Yes, sir. We will pay you our taxes. Oh, Hare Krishna, what can you say? But so many people know. At least they know some things. And they have a general idea. So in that sense, they don't want to pay taxes. And then they themselves, the taxed people, are just, you know, so many, if not practically all, if not actually all, are just big rascals themselves. And as far as they're concerned, my sense gratification is the only thing that matters. And therefore, I should just, whatever resources I can get my hands on, I should take or keep and use for me, for my sense gratification, my material enjoyment. Welcome to the material world. But here, as we read, the king exacts taxes for the benefit of the servant or the taxed. So we were reading in the 11th canto how in Treta Yuga, when the Varnashram system became established, there is no Varnashram in Satya Yuga. Everyone is beyond it. They're just too, so high, they don't need it. But it becomes introduced in Treta Yuga. And so the Vaishyas, the business class, after all, the business class, they're the people who really pay the taxes. The working class, they pay taxes, but not on the same scale as the business class. So the Vaishyas were happy to pay taxes. They were happy. Because, for example, they knew that the king will use this, just as an example, to maintain the army. So we will actually be protected. Because, being the material world, every now and then someone would come and attack. This is just the way it works. And if they were there on their own, even if they kept all their money and got a bigger house and more facilities, etc., but if there was no proper army, well trained and well equipped, and just completely in the mood of let's protect, they'd get wiped out. They'd be wiped out in minutes by some, you know, well equipped and organized aggressive force. Srila Prabhupada once pointed out, well, one of the defects of democracy, of course there are so many, but one, Srila Prabhupada said, there was a small country and everyone in the small country was highly intellectual. And they would solve all their problems and work everything out by democratic means. They'd sit down and discuss it, and then they'd decide, right. And things were going very nicely. Next door, there was a much bigger country, and all the people there were really much lower class and kind of heavy, aggressive, violent people, gross people. So one day, the big country invaded the little country and took over. And the intellectual people in the little country said, hang on a minute, you can't do that. We didn't discuss amongst ourselves that residents of the little country. We didn't discuss and decide you could come in and take over, so you can't do it. And the people from the big country, they said, well look, we discussed it, and we decided to do it, and there's more of us, so it's democratic. Anyway. So, between the Lord and the devotee, in order for the relationship to work, in order for everyone to be happy, and particularly the devotees, in one sense the Lord can just be happy anyway because he's independent. Yeah, and he's self-sufficient. He is not dependent on us. But although we are dependent on him, so ultimately really the main thing is in regard to the devotees, is that unless we are in the position of being the pure servants, we cannot be happy. We need to be in that position. Otherwise we cannot be happy. In material life, of course, and Srila Prabhupada points it out just so clearly. Unfortunately,
When the eternal relationship of master and servant is disturbed, the living entity wants to become separately happy and thinks that the master is his order supplier. Who is God? Is he the big boss, the master, the lord, the proprietor? No. He's the one who gives me what I want. And if he doesn't, I'll teach him, I'll convert. You know, if Krishna won't give me what I want, then I'll tell him, tough luck, Krishna, goodbye, I'm becoming a Muslim. See if Allah does better. And if Allah fails, then, who needs you, Allah? I'll become a Christian. And if, you know, Jehovah or whoever on that side doesn't work out, I'll tell them, see you later. I'll become a Buddhist or a Shun, I don't know what. I'll worship the ancestors, see how they do. And if the ancestors don't come through, I'll just do it myself. I'll become an atheist and do it my way. So, that's a very important point to get. And Prahlad, you know, this verse purport is just really presenting this point so vividly and so nicely. That we have to get into the position of pure devotional service, actually. There's no good alternative. There are many alternatives. None of them are any good at all. And even ultimately, the person who is God conscious, he is somewhat God conscious, but he's really thinking that the Lord is there to fulfill my desires. That person's position is at very best precarious. We mentioned a couple of days ago about, there was one purport which quoted chapter 7, verse, what was it? 16, I think. Chato vidava jante man jana sukrita norajana arto jigyasa artati jnani chabaratarshava. Four types of pious men may begin to render devotional service to me, Krishna says. The distressed, the desire of wealth, the inquisitive, and those who are truly searching for knowledge of the Absolute. So particularly the first two cases, those who may turn to God when they're distressed or when they need money. It's a start. It's a start. At least they're approaching the Lord. And they're not just taking some other approach of just drinking away their troubles or taking to a life of crime or whatever, something like that. Or committing suicide, even if their problems are bad enough. At least they're approaching the Lord. The Lord is real. So at least they are doing something real. And they're praying to the Lord, solve my problems. But the problem with just taking the Lord only as a person who can solve my problems, and that's all, is that when your problems are solved by the grace of the Lord, then you have no more need for him. And you know what material life is like. If you have no more need for something, particularly if you're American, you throw it in the rubbish. Yeah, throw it in the junk. Even if it's still usable, particularly in America. You know, if something, if there's a better one now, then so many things get thrown away. A computer which 5 years ago was top of the world, nowadays may literally be thrown in the rubbish. So, this is consumer mentality. And of course, you know, the business people and the government They have to encourage the consumer mentality. Otherwise, businesses will not make money and will therefore not be able to pay taxes. And how will we live? Yeah, so consumerism rules. Interesting sort of sociological or ecological point. Some of our devotees from Hungary who are PhDs in like economics and agricultural things and highly intelligent and very well informed, they did research about the capacity of this planet to produce like oil, like food, like timber, these things, the capacity of this planet to produce. And then they did a study on the consumption of the population of the United States of America of these things, of food and etc., etc. And of course they noted that everywhere in the world everyone is materially following in the footsteps of the Americans, and every country in their own way, but effectively every country is trying to become another United States of America without exception. And the conclusion was, if every country, the population of every country consumes per capita as much as the residents of America consume, we will need six planets. Yeah. We will need six planets. This planet just could not do it at all. And gradually, as consumerism increases throughout the world, this problem is, well, it's already becoming recognized as a problem, but it's going to become an insurmountable problem. You know, who would like to go and colonize the moon? Or Mars? So this whole idea is that who is the Lord? Ah, he is the order supplier. It's the same thing. It's materialism in the guise of religion, God consciousness, like that. So, as we said, at best it's a precarious position, because people may turn to God when they're distressed, but when they're no longer distressed, unless they see further reason to approach God, they'll stop once the distress is gone. Because people don't do things they don't need to do. And same with needing money. Once people have enough and they're living okay, then why bother with God? Now we've got what we really wanted. Prabhupada, I think I mentioned the other day, was giving a lecture in America at a university a few days ago. And he mentioned this little saying from the Lord's Prayer in Christianity, "Give us this day our daily bread." And Prabhupada said, actually religion means to develop love of God. But what is this verse? What is it? Give us this day our daily bread. This verse is about love of bread. And God is simply a facility for what we're really interested in, which is the bread. Yeah. So, it may be some people, as Krishna says, they may begin to render service to me, distressed, desiring wealth, and so on. So some of those people, in the course of praying to the Lord, help me become free from my distress, they may get some higher idea that this is not all there is to God consciousness. There's more to it.
And ultimately there's more benefit to be got from it than just relief from distress or just material comfort and resources and stability. There is more that could be gained through developing a relationship with God. But the problem is, not so many of them come to that point. They get stuck on that level of, he's there to solve problems or provide material facility. They get stuck. So we see, to a very large extent, this is what is going on around the world with people who are religious. Even I mentioned also the other day, in Buddhism, Buddhism is a nihilistic philosophy. Shunyavad, we say, when we pray to Srila Prabhupada, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi, Prasthitya Dejitarne, that he defeated and showed the defects in Mayavad, impersonalism, it's all one, we're all God, and Shunyavad, that nothing exists. Because shunya means zero in Sanskrit. And even in all of the North Indian languages to this day, shunya means nothing. Zero. And vad means knowledge. Knowledge of nothing. So what is knowledge of nothing? It's nothing. Yeah. But in Buddhism, of course there's different schools, but in the northern school, which is the Dalai Lama school, you visit many of their temples, and they're full of demigods. And people come and pray to the demigods for material things. And it is, compared to what Buddhism really is, which of course we don't agree with at all, but anyway, just in and of itself, they have missed the point so extremely obviously, because it's so clear that Buddhism is totally got nothing to do with this world. Nothing to do with anything, because nothing exists. Even Buddhism doesn't exist. It was actually a fact, according to Buddhism. According to Buddhism, it doesn't exist. So like this, materialism has infiltrated anti-materialism, if you call religion anti-materialism. Materialism has infiltrated anti-materialism so completely that anti-materialism has become, you know, in one sense, as bad as materialism. I mean, it is just disguised, thinly disguised materialism. And, well, that means Kali Yuga has won. It's won. Kali has won. He's taken over. Yes. It's a sad scene. But if we... The point is, Prahlad Maharaj's point is that you, my Lord, you are so wonderful. You are just so wonderful in every respect that I feel inspired. In fact, I feel completely inspired, 100%, to just give my everything for your pleasure. Everything. As Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I think it was, says, Manasa deha geha yo kichumo apilung tua pade nandakishwar. Manasa, my mind. Deha, my body. Deha, my house. Sri Sri Nitai Mayapur Chandra ki jai. Yes, Manasa Deha Geha, my mind, my body, my house. Yo Kichumo, whatever may be mine or
I might say as mine? Apilum tua pade. I offer that to your lotus feet, Nanda Kishore. So Prahlad Maharaj feels exactly the same way, that you are the real master. You are worth it. You are worth everything. And I want to give everything. And if I find any vestige of my existence, which I haven't given, I'm going to give that too, if I find it. Because you are worth it. You're worth it, and it's the only appropriate thing. It's the only appropriate way to relate with you. So now you're telling me, I want to give you something material. You must ask for something. You know, you're bringing yourself down. You're bringing yourself down. It's like prostitution. Well, in that economic sense, it is economic prostitution as such. You don't need to do it. Don't do it. Don't cheapen yourself. Now, of course, in this situation, as we'll see, the Lord is not cheapening himself. Although it looks like he is. The Lord is very clever. So he can do different things at the same time. Even contradictory things at the same time. So it looks like he's prostituting himself, and there's just absolutely no need to do it, because, you know, if he wants service, he's already got it. He's got the full surrender of Prahlad Maharaj. So there's no need to do it. Srila Prabhupada and everything becomes disjointed and unbalanced. The relationship becomes unbalanced. It's like if the wife, I mean, this is not perhaps a very good example, but if the wife says, oh, you want me to cook for you? Really? To the husband. Well, how much are you going to give me? It just, the relationship just becomes thrown out. Yeah. So, Srila Prabhupada gives an example to illustrate the sort of, the unreality of taking that approach. Thinking that in order to benefit me, in order to get what I require, to be happy, I need to request the Lord for me, or even make my own arrangements for me. And then I'll be as happy as I could be, happier than I would be through any other means. Prabhupada gives the example of the hand in relation to the body. The hand, for so many years, saw how he was putting the food in the mouth every day, a few times a day, and for years and years. And the hand one day thought, wait a minute, what am I getting out of this? The mouth, the body is getting everything. I'm getting nothing. I just get the work of lifting from the plate to the mouth. So it's a bad deal. And the hand decided, right, I'm going to look after myself now, look after number one. I'm going to take the food and somehow consume it myself. Then I will enjoy, just see, I'm becoming smart. So the hand tried to do that, trying to squeeze the food into itself and not putting any in the mouth. But after a day, a couple of days, the hand realized, wow, I'm not feeling so good. I've lost energy. My vitality has gone. What happened? So the hand started putting food back in the mouth, and then shortly, the hand felt good again. A simple example, Prabhupada gave this example though, because it illustrates the principle, the point,
quite nicely, that if we want to look after ourselves, we should not look after ourselves. Yeah? In one sense, you could say, the worst thing you could do for yourself is try to look after yourself. But what you should do is take shelter of Krishna. Look after Krishna. Serve Krishna. Try to please Krishna. Absolutely. Even to the point of not putting in a little note at the end. You know, you do your service, you serve all day, you're about to take rest at night, and you say, oh, Krishna, by the way, could I have some money? And that's it. That's all you say. Even without that, you simply serve Krishna. If the hand simply puts the food in the mouth and literally takes nothing, then the hand will be truly benefited. So we, if we simply try to serve Krishna as the real ourselves as the real servants, accepting him as the real master, then we will be best off. Actually, we'll be extremely happy. In fact, we'll become so happy that from our position now, and having experienced whatever happiness we may have experienced somehow or other in this lifetime, the happiness we will get from serving Krishna as the real servants will so far eclipse the best happiness we've had so far. Just totally in another dimension. Whereas, if we try to look after ourselves, either through blatant materialism, just try and get what we can ourselves, or through relating to the Lord in a blatantly materialistic way, then we will not be so happy at all. And again, the example of the hand, he noticed, wow, I'm not feeling good. And in material life, just see, people are not feeling so good. They are not feeling so good at all. In order to feel good, so many of them, they think we have to drink some liquor or smoke something or like that. Yeah, in order to just get out of our unpleasant position. So really the solution, and even Srila Prabhupada made the point, and the Vedic literatures make the point, that human life, real human life, it only really begins when you question, why am I suffering? Why isn't it working? I'm trying to get things and do things and enjoy, but it's not working. Why? The whole program is failing. Why? Isn't there a better way, just a whole way? Surely there's a better way. So this is the better way to become the servants of the real master. And then Srila Prabhupada, in the last part of the purport, he introduces a further element which is going to come up, I think, in one of the verses following, a very famous verse somewhere, that we can serve Krishna. Yes, he's the real master, and we should be the real servants. But in one sense, better is to serve the other real servants. If you want to endear yourself to the Lord, you can serve him. He'll notice. But if you serve those who are dear to him, he'll notice even more. Jiva Goswami says in Bhakti Sandarbha that serving the devotees is a more effective way of developing love for God than trying to develop love for God. Yes. You serve those who are dear to the Lord. Because the devotees, through their service, the real servants, the real devotees, through their devotional service and their total surrender, they become more dear to the Lord than he is to himself. Sometimes you see, or you hear, classic case, the house is burning down, the child is still inside, and the mother runs in to save the child because she feels that it would be better, you know, living without the child would be worse than dying. Even someone, it may have been Lenin or somebody like that, raised the question, when can revolution occur? What he said is, when people are so oppressed that living becomes worse than dying, then they can take up revolution seriously. So, the Lord feels that the devotees, they're more dear to me than I am to me. They mean so much to me, they mean everything to me. And when we please those devotees, then Krishna becomes more pleased than if we please him directly, even if we please him completely. But he becomes more pleased when we please the devotees who are so dear to him. So this is really the process, that we should be real servants. The Lord is already the real master. We need to understand that and accept that we don't need to put in our shopping list, Krishna, just in case you forgot, I need this and that. I mean, I'm not suggesting you're forgetful, but yeah, why not throw it in? Krishna knows what we need better than we know what we need. And if we leave it up to him and just try to serve him, then we'll be looked after by him completely in the very best way. Hare Krishna. Any comment or question? Yes.
Maharaj, thank you for the very enlightening class. I was just wondering, the rapid increase in consumerism, is that due to the pushing of society saying, this is how you're supposed to be, you have to buy to be happy, or is it because because in the age of Kali, people are becoming more and more degraded, that they're moving so the more they move away from God, they think, oh well, the more stuff we buy, you know, it'll just fill the void.
Well, it's a combination. You know, at the root is the desire to enjoy independently, at the root of the whole phenomenon of life in the material world. and that, you know, they have an attitude towards the Lord, this predisposition, even if they're religious, that, you know, what's he good for? He's not good to surrender. You know, we shouldn't surrender to him. Why would we do that? He's good for giving us things. So he becomes a facility for our enjoyment. But anyway, the main thing is how to enjoy. Look around, see how other people are doing it. And, oh, look, the Americans are doing it the best. I mean, not just the Americans, but in their way they're the leaders. Consumerism, oh, look, this is the way to become happy. This is the way to become happy. If we can consume more and get more, consume more, we're going to enjoy more. So, you know, in the course of all of this, their characters are going down because they're becoming attached, more and more attached to sense gratification. So they become more attached. Well,
they do sort of, you could say, normal sense gratification, if there is such a thing. But then after a while they see, we're not getting so much from normal sense gratification. Let's go into some heavier sense gratification. You know, they're smoking dhaka. After a while, we need something more. And then something more. And then it's narcotics. And then, illicit sex life. Well, you can get married. And then you can engage in sex life. But that's how it was. Just in, say, the 50s, there was hardly any idea in society amongst the great majority that, sex life outside of marriage, it was just, not that it wasn't happening at all, but it was really quite small. And then the hippie revolution came and, so-called free love, and if you can't be with the one you love, love the one you're with, so to speak. all these types of things. And then, then first of all, sex outside of marriage. And then, extreme versions of it. And then with the same sex. And then with animals. And then, it's a shame to even have to say these things. So because the seed is there, we want to enjoy independent. And where we're looking for the enjoyment, sense gratification, what's available in this world, it cannot satisfy the desire. So after a while, we want more. And then we want different. And then we want more different and different more. Like this. Yeah. So degradation occurs as people become attached, more attached to sense gratification and attached to more extreme forms of sense gratification. And at the same time, they're looking around. Who's doing it the best? Who's most advanced in sense gratification? Let's follow them. And, it's the Americans. Let's follow them. And they're consuming. Let's consume. So it's a combination of all these things. And, it's a combination of all these things. Have I sort of answered your question, or to some degree? Yeah.
Marge, within a society like ours, where we're the anti-consumer or the anti-materialist,
right?
There's a tendency, even within our society, that people accumulate wealth, and many devotees are inspired by other devotees making more money and becoming wealthy.
Right.
If someone has a BMW, they aspire for that.
Right.
And
it's the infiltration of materialism. I mean, at least in many cases, maybe not at all.
Well, some devotees probably would claim that they're dovetailing material things in service of Krishna. How can we draw the line between pure consumerism or materialism within ISKCON and dovetailing for the use in the Lord's service?
Well, you have to see if it is being dovetailed. Someone has a lot of money, more than they need, a lot more than they need. So, are they actually using it in Krishna's service? Some people, an argument can be made that, if I don't get the better car, the tax man will take the money. Right? So, to get the better car, it's a type of an argument. It's a type of an argument. It's not a very good one. But in such a situation, there may not be a very good argument. And, if you get the good car, because if you didn't, then the tax man would literally just take all the money. And you would, it wouldn't have benefited you, materially even, what to speak of spiritually. But if you get a good car, you know, sometimes you can take devotees to some programs, or take the Jagannath deities, you know, to the Rath Yatra, or something like that. It's something. It's not a lot, actually, but it's something. So, you know, but it's also in another sense a sort of a grey area, because, you know, let the government take the money and you get a cheap car, and then you're less attached. You know, if you get some expensive car, then the tendency, you know, to get into being the driver, you know, I know cars, I drive cars, and getting into the whole driver mentality, that can also undermine a person's Krishna consciousness. Whereas if they have a cheap car, then, you know, it's just, it's much easier to see it just as something I use to get around in, rather than, you know, my sense gratification. And the big house. I mean, of course, people need, householders need a house. That's householders. It's part of it. They need a house. But they don't need a Raj Mahal, or even half of a Raj Mahal. They just need enough to live decently in a, you know, indecently, in a responsible way. The Pandavas lived in palaces, but they were ruling. And because they were ruling, Prabhupada says somewhere in the Bhagavatam, they needed to present themselves in a certain way to be taken seriously as the rulers. But actually they were not attached. They were really not attached. And they had lived in the forest. And Yudhisthira, who of the Pandavas actually became the king, he was repeatedly saying to the other Pandavas, let's just go back to the forest. We were happier there, it was nicer there. Just living under the trees. Let's do that. But because of his actual, you know, position, he's the king of the whole planet. And he has to, for political, transcendental political purposes, he has to maintain a certain presence, which, you know, partly to frighten people, frighten some people, that, you know, this man is a really big, powerful man, and if I do something illegal, he may smash me into the ground, and he could, look at him, he could smash me into the ground. So by that presence of the royal order, their opulence, and so on, it helped them actually, it actually helped them do their duty. And even, well, you know who? Ambarish Das, Alfred Ford, who is, I suppose, the wealthiest member of ISKCON. You know, he's worth many, many millions of dollars. But he himself lives not in a, like a mansion, huge thing, but in a really nice house. And he said, from the business point of view, he feels it's important to maintain a type of presence within the business community. So, you know, where to draw the line? Well, you know, you'd have to see, is the person dovetailing in fact? Or are they just, you know, enjoying material life? And, you know, if they feel they have an argument for maintaining a more substantial than average type of material presence, is there really an argument in terms of their employment or their business or their position in society?
Someone's really...
They really need to speak to you. Maybe it's a sign from Krishna that we should finish. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Yeah.